All right, guys, we're going to talk in English because we are going to have a very special guest today from Norway. We are very honored. She used to be a player. She played 73 times for the Norwegian national team. She is raising three kids. In her previous profession, she was studying law and afterwards used to work as a lawyer and also as a judge. And she is very highly motivated when it comes to women's rights. And since March 2022, she is president of the Norwegian Football Federation. And the reason why we wanted to talk to her is the speech she held in late March at the FIFA Congress in Doha. In my name and in Anna's name, Lise, a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for your time. Seems that you're quite busy. Kids, work.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's not a good mix with three small kids and presidency. But I was also the sports director for the national teams before I became president, and it was also hell. So to combine with kids. So I'm used to it.
That's very impressive. Well, Lise, we have been deeply impressed, we have to say, by your speech when we listened to it, those minutes in March. And we would like to talk about a little bit about that speech, first of all. Like, how did you come up with the idea? How did you come up with the words? What was your intention? It has been sort of greatly noticed all around the world because it was a great forum, and there was basically everybody who was in charge in big positions in football, and it was a very brave speech. Can you explain a little bit the background to that speech to us?
Yeah, sure. It is a special background because we've had this Qatar debate in Norway very intensely since I guess the start of 2020, when the Guardian had an article or so about the dead workers and injured workers. And then it ended up with a vote actually at our Congress, an extraordinary Congress in the Norwegian Federation, to vote yes or no to boycott Qatar World Cup. And I was not the president then. I was the technical director, sports director. So we were heavily involved with the national teams because our national team also had these different demonstrations with human rights T-shirts and so on. So we were very involved from the sports department, which I led. But then at that Congress, our members voted no to boycott. But at the same time, they voted on very many initiatives we should follow up on. One of them being that we should criticize FIFA at FIFA's Congress for the award of this World Cup. So, and I was not the president then, and the president should do this. Later, I was elected president, and this task came up just 3 weeks after my election. So I realized very short after my election that we hadn't thought about this in a while, and I realized that the Congress is coming up now, and it's actually in Qatar, and I realized it would be a difficult task, and then I started straight away to write on that speech how to criticize FIFA then at the Congress. So it was actually an assignment from our members, and I did also feel that in Doha it was on behalf of the whole all members in Norway.
So for those people who are listening to us and they don't know like exactly the words of your speech, could you please sum up for us what are the major changes that have to be done regarding the World Cup in Qatar, but as well the following tournaments, of course?
I guess our attempt was to also try to make a platform of an ethical and value debate of international football as such. So of course, we had to check out the assignment of criticizing FIFA for the award of the World Cup. That it was so that was, of course, one of the main messages, that it was an unacceptable award with unacceptable consequences, and that it had many consequences, amongst them breach of fundamental human rights. And that should never happen again. I also choose, and we choose to make it a bit wider to try to call some attention and action upon the urgency of international football and an ethical question in the tendency we're facing also with. When it comes more and more money into football, which is, you know, in itself can be very good, of course, it just shows that it's an attractive sport. But the ethical standards of the leaders needs to be very high, and also the governance structures needs to be very safe and transparent. than we have seen in the last decade or so, of course, before that also, it has been very many big cases showing that it's a big championship will go more and more to authoritative or dictatorship states, and that more and more owners would, state ownership in clubs. You have seen Putin, for example, be very close to football. You know, of course, leaders in football needs to be close to state leaders. But you see, Putin has been much closer to the football movement than Angela Merkel, for example. So it's, you know, it has been turned more and more so towards values that are difficult to handle side by side with the core values of football. So, and of course, also women rights in this, because FIFA has said, and to me it's a given, that when we arrange the biggest tournament of the world, which is so heavy symbolic also, it's important that it's a country who also run women's football, that try to develop, you know, the whole football. And you cannot do that with if you rule out 50% of the population.
Yeah. In preparation of this interview, I listened to the speech again, and you can watch it on YouTube. Everybody who wants to watch it can watch it on YouTube. And I just had a quick look on the reactions. I mean, that's always, you have to take that sort of critical in times as well. But I looked at the reactions, and they were all like overwhelming positive. And I was thinking to myself, you know, if I ask my friends and colleagues, they would probably all agree with what you said. But I think what was so rare was to actually speak out those words so clearly in that kind of context. How come that it's so rarely been done to have those clear words and those direct words? Do you have an explanation for that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm new to this role. I've been president now for 3 months. I come from the administration. I come from being a lawyer. I've never been a politician. I've never wanted to be a politician. I did not want now either. I said no 3 times to the election committee. So it's because I was afraid of this, that we don't say what we mean. So I don't know why it is so. I do notice after the speech that I did notice before going to the stage that it was controversial. It was very special. People tried to stop me, also nice people on my own behalf, trying to warn me that it would kill me politically and that it would be very difficult afterwards. And it is difficult afterwards. I do think everyone would say they agree, but I don't see many do it afterwards either. And it's also, of course, very good reasons to not go internally to stages to have criticism. Of course, you should have in your company also a culture where you talk to people face to face. But when it comes to core values in a democracy, it should be, of course, a stage where we have these discussions, because the public part of it is part of the dynamic to have it publicly. So for me, it's also a surprise that this is so rare, and that the structure don't really, you know, take it or isn't built for it. But I do notice afterwards that people, very many agree, but I do sense also that very many wants to, you know, now you have said it, try now to talk about a bit other things, which I will, of course. But it is very many strengths or powers trying to pull it back to how it was. So I don't think it's a very, very wanted development.
There was like a huge echo after your speech. Some people even compared you with Martin Luther King. So I would be interested in the question, was there any reaction from the president, from Gianni Infantino, like behind the scenes? Because there was no reaction from him right after the speech.
No, I met Gianni Infantino a couple of times before I held the speech, because I was a new elected president, and obviously he calls new presidents, which I didn't know, but he did, and that was just a nice normal conversation, and I would say very normal, and we even talked about the war in Russia, and I also addressed that I would go to the stage in the Congress, because we had reported it in before Christmas, And in that conversation, it did not seem that he knew it, and it was no negative reaction, I would say. And I also talked to him the day before going to the stage, just as a new colleague of him. I addressed it again because I wanted to not be a false person, or, you know, that tomorrow I'm going to do this and that. And he did not comment it then either. So afterwards, I've not discussed this with him. I said hello to him at the draw the day after. I did also. No, I haven't had any conversations with him afterwards.
It's really interesting what you just said previously, that you feel sometimes that there people don't want change. And Anna and my podcast is basically about things like that, that we sometimes feel being women working in a man's field in sport general, that it's mainly the male perspective. And there is a female perspective, but it's never been talked about. It's never been published in, well, we're both journalists, and people just don't talk about that perspective. And it is as if the perspective is not there, but it is for 50% of the people. So, well, is that something? I mean, I read that during the speech, you felt that there were people watching away. They didn't watch, or they weren't interested. I mean, the thing is, what is your strategy that we place those issues, and that we try to give people an understanding of that those topics and those developments, they are made by only 50% of the population?
Yeah, I do really understand what you say. Of course, I do think that this is also something relevant also for men, you know, and minority men, gay people or whatever. In sport, it is in football and sport, you can sometimes feel that you're a minority, even though you're, you know, a woman, you know. So we're like a normal variant of the human population, and it's the biggest sport in the world for women. So it's not a rare thing, but it is that it is so in the top leadership. So I've just always tried to, like you have a podcast, and you try to stay away from the victim part of it, because you know it drags you down. It takes away your strength. So to me, that has just, I've led so many men. I led the national team for men. I've been the technical director for men and the women, and they are nice men. You know, I've had so, but I do think it is important to address this. It's very easy to be little, you know, to be dragged down and shrimp yourself in this, or to just become too much, you know, just talk about feminism, you know what I mean? It because of these structures, easy to become less of a leader, you know. So to me, I'm just conscious about the fact that you know, I like to work with people. I love people. I do think the best of people, and I just try to force myself to stick to that optimism around people. Because when I start to become self-conscious, or, you know, feel small, or feel that how do I look, or, you know, then I don't perform. So, and I don't make people perform. So I've had a life in this, like you probably have had. You know, I was TV pundit thing. I was the first woman commenting the men's game, Premier League and World Cup for men. And back then it was, now it's much better, but then it was awful. You know, people would always comment how ugly I was or whatever, you know, and I thought, why do I even care? You know, I'm married, you know, I don't care. But you know, it makes you self-conscious, you know, it takes you out of the zone. And so I have spent my life, so it's become a strength for me, these things. That's my point, that after tens of years, I've decided to contribute to normalize this. We have so many good women coming up, and so we just, my generation needs to erase this border, you know, and I think it's happening. You know, we're now three presidents in Europe, with female presidents, and it was last year, I think, none. So 3 out of 55, not much, but 0 out of 55 last year. I was the only technical director leading the men's national team for women, or the only women leading men's national team. And that is the big barrier, I think, to have female lead the technical part of sport. And hopefully we can, I don't even know if I answered your question now, you know, I
Not
yeah,
when you did.
Along the way.
Yeah, along the way. No, but I do think it's very, the psychological things, I think those are very interesting myself also. And of course, I'm not a robot. You do take these things in, and you become smaller and sad and everything. But in the end, they are no motivating to me because it annoys me so much.
I mean, this weekend here in the Bundesliga, it was the first time a woman hand over the Bundesliga trophy to the champion, to Bayern Munich, Donata Hopfen, which is the new boss of the Bundesliga of the DFL. And when I saw that, I was thinking, wow, it's 2022 and this is happening really for the first time. So you have an equality policy within your Norwegian Federation, and I think we need more of that too. Building a bridge to the German football, to the German Football Federation. You had a talk with Bernd Neuendorf as well, the new president of the DFB, who I get the impression is really willing to make a change in many subjects. So what were your topics you were talking about?
He addressed me after the speech because he was also a new president and wanted to engage in a good way in this very, you know, it is difficult to engage in these political cases because, like today, I've had messages that say, why do you accept, you know, gay, that it's legal laws against gay people in Qatar? And at the same time, I get mail saying that, why don't you do for your football job? Why do you care about gay people rights in Qatar? You know, so it's easier to not do it, you know. So I do admire the fact that the new president of such a big federation as Germany starts by trying to engage in these, you know, I don't know the German or English word for it, but, you know, this minefield of, you know, difficult questions. So he addressed me to that we could learn from each other. And we decided to have cooperation going into that UEFA group of countries that work with the Qatar question, trying to push for, you know, migrant center compensation for injured workers and some court cases. So my impression by him is just that he's an open, that he comes in with an open. I don't know him, but my you know, I'm an emotional person, and my emotion is that he comes in with an open mind, trying to go by case and not the, you know, power narrative. You know what I mean? So I think that's a good start. Mm-hmm. It's a good person. I think he is that, but. And he was the first to address me after Doha. And it's also good to have a big federation confirming your existence, so to speak.
Yeah. In your speech, you said you must take all necessary measures to really implement change. And you just, said that in structures which are so big and so, well, technical, it's hard. How is it possible to implement change? Is it like making contacts like to Bernd Neuendorf and other people and try to work together to make a bigger, to make something bigger, a thought?
I think so, because of course it's since the speech and before the speech, I've given up 100 times and then climbed up the back again. And then, so it's a frustrating you know, things are also good, you know, but and bad, you know, it's a structure with strengths and weaknesses, and it's easy to give up because we're a small country and everybody has their own, you know, agenda, I strongly think that it's very important to have change on certain, you know, ethical reflexes, and also the way we talk about these matters, because the answer alone is not in the law or in the political structures or in the competitions. You know, it's in everything. So you need the dynamics of the ethical debate all the time. And if it's only in the press that happens, the press, you know, they live from clicks and conflicts. So that also makes the football leaders afraid, because they know it's, you know, at the next time it's like, why didn't you not care about Russia or Brazil, or, you know, and then it's like you give up. So I do think it has to come from the movement itself, you know, and of course it's many good discussions in football. I'm not saying that here am I and coming to tell people how to do their job. Not at all. You know, it's a global movement, has lived for 100 years. It's strong and has done very much good. But the last, you know, when the big money has come in, we see the direction it's taking, with also the Super League discussion and the elitism around that. And we also see that it's easier and easier to have championship in dictatorships, even though I think it's very important to have football everywhere. I do think it's important to have these dynamic discussions around why is it so, and do we want it to go that way? It's not easy to have only regulated in fair play laws or competitions. It is a leadership matter. And to have changes in that, then the leaders, you know, it's a leadership discussion, and a pressure also on ourselves, of course, also from the media. But so yes, I do think alliances and, you know, also supporters, but alliances between leaders, wanting to have changes and daring to discuss those abstract matters, you know, knowing that it's easy to be ridiculized and be criticized, and it's easier to not do it. But I do think it's worth it, and it's necessary. Or else, you know, I think it's easier for the women, because I've heard so many times football is not politics, and I agree. You know, I slept with the ball in my bed. It was just football for me. I didn't think about politics at all. But politics have made the game inviting for the women. So politics has been necessary. For example, I want to go high school, football high school in town. There was football high school for boys, and I applied, and I got no because I was a girl. And I didn't. It was not politics. I wanted to play football. It was no option for girls. So one politician engaged in this. I did not even know this. It just happened and made me come in. So politics made me follow my dream. So I guess it's more natural for us to know that politics is not a bad word. It's good politics should, you know, safeguard the football core values.
One important point you're talking about as well is the legal safety for the LGBTQ community. And just like some minutes before we started our recording, I read an article about some TV reporters from Scandinavia. Maybe you saw it on TV, I don't know. They wanted to book a hotel room in Qatar, and they pretended to be a gay couple. And in some cases, they have been rejected because they said, you're not allowed to sleep at our hotel, and you're not allowed to show like your affection in public. When you traveled to Qatar, before you even checked with the foreign minister of Norway if it's safe for you to travel to Qatar because you're a woman who loves a woman. So, what can you tell us about that? Did you feel safe there during your stay?
Yeah, I had a professional relationship, or, you know, it was a professional wrapping around it, because I knew I was going to Qatar to have public criticism of not Qatar as a state, but maybe they would take it that way. So it was, and we know that it's different culture for that part as well. And I knew that the content would also go into LGBTQ rights, and so it was important for the Federation to be sure that my personal safety was taken care of. And how to do that. So we checked with embassy and governmental structures. If it how should I behave? Do it when I go to the stage and have this kind of criticism. I did feel safe. I got the feedback that as long as I am a public person doing this in a FIFA Congress, it should be really no. Should really be no risk while being there, and that I should, you know, try to avoid to repeat it, you know, on the streets and with different medias everywhere. And I was, you know, I was only at the hotel and at the Congress. So I did feel safe. But of course, it's just in a very interesting, experience where perspectives come to you in very many layers. I have respect for different countries. I'm not. We should not be the world police, In Norway, we have our own issues. So I have deep respect for every culture. So I try also to. It seems like something I'm just saying, but I do. And but of course, being gay myself, it's strong emotions around these things when it's not legal, and I come from a country where this is given. And also football being my passion, and I know that they don't have national team for women, which I respect, no problem, but being there in that role, it gives some perspective to that we have to fight for the direction football is going, not to exclude anyone, to try to move everyone into the parts that I actually believe from our culture. Many things we should be criticized for ourselves, but these things I think are part of team play and football core values.
We have about 8 minutes left, and we definitely want to talk to you about England and the European Championships in a minute. But I would like to address one quick question, because there has been a reunion this Wednesday in Vienna, a UEFA meeting, and Gianni Infantino has been there as well. And he held a speech. He was just a guest at that meeting, but he held a speech. And once again, he did not mention anything about Russia. There was no direct criticism about Russia or anything like that by his side. I have the feeling that the public, they are sensitive as well, and they know if people are sort of, if they have a commitment, if they're engaged to what they really say, and they know if it's the truth they're saying. And I think more and more there is a development that people don't accept that there is powerful people talking on one side, they are saying this, and on the other side, they are acting in another way. Do you agree on that, or what is your sort of feeling towards those kind of issues?
I do think it's a call for change. At least in Norway, it's been very strong, and I do think it's happening more and more that supporters of football are trying to safeguard the core values of football, and that's good. It also makes it polarized. You say that it's rigid, because supporters can also have like statements that we should not accept this and not accept. And of course, to have a global movement with 210 countries, which is very important. I believe in that. I believe in that. That's the football's biggest strength, that they move around countries and continents and politics. I do think football should be played in countries where gay people are not legal, even though it hurts me. I do think it's very important to do that. So because that is, then if you don't play football there, the people there cannot take part of this beautiful game. And I do think this is very important, that it's inviting for even those regimes. But when those are starting to govern the game, when the biggest competitions are awarded to those regimes, then that will be the normal. And we're I'm not saying we're there, but it's happening. It's more and more so. We also know that human rights organizations generally are more and more shut down in more and more countries. So even though we think in your country people would agree with me in this speech, it's not so in most other countries. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but that shows it's where are we going? We have to fight for these, for us, very given values. And I would say that they are given values for us, but it's not given the culture of speaking about them and fighting for them in the politics in even our part of the world. So it is not so normal for a president to call me like Bernd did. And maybe, he was new also. Would he have done that 10 years from now? Would I have held a speech 10 years from now? So I do think it's important that people outside do call for action, even though it's uncomfortable for us leaders, because it is. We are, what about that? What about that? What about that? And it is difficult, because you also have to run a game and a big budget. But I do think we're at such a difficult stage now that people cannot be ignorant or, I mean, indifferent. They have to engage.
Talking quickly about the Euro, Valeska already mentioned it. It's going to take place this summer in England. And our national coach, Martina Voss-Tecklenburg, who was our guest, also said she expected to be a very great tournament regarding the atmosphere, because England obviously is a big country for women's football. So what do you think, which statements can be set with this tournament for women's football?
Oh, I of course I have two sides, because I really look forward to it. I do think it's something happening, something very special happening, and it's, you know, in a different direction than the other things we're talking about, which are a bit dark, you know, and a bit painful. Women's football are going more like this, and it's very good. You know, I was at the Camp Nou watching Barcelona women taking Wolfsburg, 92,000 people there, and my tears, you know, were running the whole game, because. And not because there was so much people, but the atmosphere. I'm a Barcelona fan, so I've been there many times with the men's team. And it's many times been more than 90,000, but never this vibrant atmosphere. And I don't know why. I try to ask people, because club football for women has not ever engaged like this. National team, yes. In 99, there were almost 100,000 in the World Cup for United States. So national team, yes. But club, no. I would never think so. And now it's happening. I tried to ask people, and they're like, no, it's fun to be here. I'm like, no. It's
but there were
fun.
Kids also. Eh? There were kids and women. The mixture was really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It was normal people. Like, yeah, very young grandfather. Yeah, so it was amazing. So I do think the World Euro will continue this, and it's groundbreaking. The other part of me is, of course, very nervous. You know, I'm a president of a federation with a team. And I'm nervous for our own team. And we have been pioneers in the women's game before, and we're not favorites anymore. And, you know, I'm nervous for our team. I really want them to perform. So it's two sides.
Lovely. Well, our time is almost up, Lise. I think we would love to talk to you again anytime in the future, maybe, if it's possible for you.
Sure.
We are so happy that you made time on this day, 30 minutes for us. Thank you so much for your time and for
Thank
all
you for
explanations.
Having
me. We really support your mission and your messages and your aim to change something in this world. And we love this game of football also, and we like to make our part, or we like to do our part in changing things in this football world.
Exactly.
You are already just being two, you know, competent women having a podcast. You know, I don't think it's so many of those in Europe, so keep it up.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you, and I'm sure you keep on fighting, and I think that's good, because you're such a great role model for many women in this world. So thank you for that.
Thank you, and right back at you, and have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Talk to you later. Just say contact anytime.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Lisa.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.